Podcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect this afternoon. Tough weekend for a lot of people around this country. All of us have been profoundly aware of the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and just the terrible video, and just the whole thing seems to be so awful in our hearts. And obviously, we've all heard about the uprisings across the country. We've had the violence and looting and things going on in Albuquerque, a lot of property damage and so on and so forth. But we've also seen a lot of peaceful people walking down the streets of Central, all the way from Wyoming and Central, all the way downtown. And it's really difficult for us to understand what is going on. So today we want to welcome into the show Bishop David Cooper and Ron Wallace. They are two black gentlemen that live in our community, community leaders. David Cooper is the Bishop of New Hope Full Gospel Baptist Church. Ron Wallace is the owner of Uplifted, Inc., the publisher of Perspective Magazine. Gentlemen, welcome into ABQ Connect.
We're glad to be here, Jim.
Thank you, Jim, for the invitation.
I appreciate it. Well, I'm going to get right to it. And Bishop Cooper, again, it's a little awkward when we're on the phone. I wish you were both in studio with me. I want to let our audience know that you both responded to me this morning. I ended up feeling so concerned about everything going on and wanted our community to hear from you two gentlemen. I've known Ron for a really long time, Bishop Cooper. I've gotten to know you just a little bit over the last 3 or 4 weeks as we've had you on the show. But I know your hearts are for all people in our community, and you especially understand the plight of African-American men, black men in our community. And so I feel like I've got to ask a question of somebody that knows what they're talking about. So, Bishop Cooper, people of all races seem to be condemning the behavior of police officers responsible for this heartbreaking death of George Floyd. And then also, we don't want to forget Ahmaud Arbery, who was, you know, shot to death by a couple of white people that we still don't understand the motivations there. And that just happened 3 or 4 weeks ago. Why, if there's so much uprising right now about this and so much concern, does it keep happening? Can you tell us, Bishop Cooper?
Well, I can give you my perspective as a black man, a black Christian, a black pastor who has been pastoring for close to 40 years between here and the city of Chicago, 28 years here in Albuquerque. I think one of the things is this whole issue of institutionalized racism. And I'll be very brief, but I think it's important to recognize that there are systems in which racist people are protected by the environment, by the protocol of that particular group of people, whether or not it is the Attorney General's office or the police department or at the correctional facility. And so one of the things you have to consider that this young man who put his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck felt like it was all right to do that in front of his peers, which means that after having his knee on this young man's neck for almost 9 minutes, and the last 2.5 minutes, the young man is non-responsive, and he still has his knee on his neck. None of the three officers told him, take your knee off your neck. You shouldn't do that. We're going to get in trouble for doing that. So they all assumed that they would be covered, that they would be all right, even in the midst of what was going on. And so that's the real struggle here, is that the real struggle is that evidently inside of the police department there in Minnesota, at least in that department or at least on that shift, he was comfortable doing that. And then what you have to understand that this is just the worst kind of example of this behavior. So there are other kind of behaviors that are less severe in their outcome that are going on all the time. So maybe somebody else got their head slammed against the wall or the concrete or a door or their arm severely twisted, or them being kicked while they were still cuffed, where there was no other cameras around, nobody standing on the side. It wasn't done in the daytime. And this is constantly happening in our community. So if you just deal with it as it relates to this, so we don't go from zero to 100 and nothing in our lives. John Maxwell says when the first time he taught leadership, he messed up. But now he's an expert in teaching leadership because he's been taught it over maybe close to a million times. So as that is progressive, police brutality is a learned behavior, just like racism. And so you could expect that the same officer has done many other microaggressions to African Americans for traffic stops and other things, and that his fellow officers did not stop him and did not turn him away from this. And then the real sad part is that he's probably a member of some church in Minnesota. And that's very dangerous for us in the Christian community as we try to evangelize the world.
Yes, well, Bishop, I'm concerned because I think about myself as a citizen, and had I been standing on that street, and would I, as a white person, have had the courage to actually intervene on his behalf? Because obviously what was happening, I couldn't even understand from the video why he was on the ground, because when he was originally taken into custody, and by the way, I haven't heard anybody discuss anything about why he was taken into custody, and I don't think any of us would really even question, okay, well, maybe he was doing something he shouldn't be doing, but there was no excuse because he was completely passive in the other videos. He might have been having a conversation that the police officer didn't want to be questioned on, but again, there was no excuse for the brutality that took place and for taking a man's life, and it's just so sad. But I don't know if I would have had the courage to intervene, to actually go up to the three officers that kind of be standing there like soldiers protecting this man as he held Mr. Floyd on the ground. So I would have been disappointed in myself had I not done something if I was standing there. Ron, I want to ask you, and I need to tell everybody, all of our listeners, I've known Ron Wallace for a pretty long time. Ron, probably over 35, 40 years. You were a football player at the University of New Mexico. I will point out to everybody that I'm a little younger than you. I hope you don't mind. I played basketball at the University of New Mexico. We got to be friends. You know a lot about me because you worked with my father with the city of Albuquerque, and he's always thought a lot about you. And Ron has really taken over. He publishes the Perspective magazine. Want to let everybody know that if you're interested in taking a look at what they have to do, you can go to Facebook.com/ the Perspective NM for New Mexico. And equally, we also want to make sure you know how to get in touch with Bishop Cooper. Their Facebook page is facebook.com, New Hope Experience ABQ, the New Hope Experience ABQ. And that way you can get to both of their Facebook pages for more information. But Ron, I want to ask you, as a young man growing up in Albuquerque, how were you personally affected by racism as you grew up?
Jim, I'm going to correct you there. I was actually born in Dallas, Texas. Mm. So there were plenty of opportunities of racism in Dallas. Mm. But I do want to talk about something that, just want to touch on something.
Oh, please do. Please do.
You asked that question, and you can put your mind to rest about would you have intervened and would you have made a difference, simply because there were people there who were screaming their heads off, and the officers stood there and guarded them from providing any assistance, and they didn't take into account any of their pleas for help and to get your knee off. He can't breathe. So, yeah, put that to rest. You wouldn't have been able to be effective because they would not have allowed you. The police officers that were there would have, if you had tried, you'd have ended up in that same situation. So, you know, put that to rest. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that we keep looking at other cities having these problems, but we got to realize that Albuquerque, they have had the Justice Department has come in here to address the murder of police officers and citizens. They've been on that are you getting feedback, Jim? I keep getting
a little bit. Do you have your phone on speakerphone, Ron?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, if you take it off, it'll come in a lot more clearly. And again, I apologize with, you know, all the social distancing and everything. We've been trying to make sure that we interview people over the phone. We are allowing people back in the studio. And if we can get you back on the air here in the next few weeks, maybe you would feel comfortable with that. But we've been just trying to make people as comfortable as possible, but there are some drawbacks. I want you also, Ron, to feel like having a conversation directly with Bishop Cooper, even though I'm kind of the host. I'd love for you guys, let's just have a three-way conversation. It's difficult under these kind of circumstances, and then there's a high degree of emotion. I mean, I can tell both you and Bishop Cooper are emotional about this, and you should be. I heard some testimonies this morning on Good Morning America about one of the news anchors that they have is a black woman, and she actually interviewed her son who's in high school, and he's absolutely has all kinds of reasons to be fearful about how he'll be treated. So that's why I wanted to have this conversation. Ron, go ahead and finish up your comments.
Well, no, I was just adding to the point that the Department of Justice has been here Albuquerque a couple of times, and we never got the information as to what the outcome was. We never got information back down into the community or how effective their visit was. All of those things remain, the stuff that we don't get. And so you think nothing's been done. And so they were talking about police reform. Albuquerque police has not been reformed, and that's been a subject a lot of times. That has been a subject of the city council and the mayor. But everybody's so afraid of the unions, and that they always back down on any reform that comes out. The unions are so strong here with the police department. It's like a cult, and so that those are the things. And that's going to have to be somebody's got to be strong enough to take on the unions to be able to change the culture of the police department.
Well, I want to make both of you aware of a couple things that I happen to know. Chief Mike Geyer has been on this program. We've actually talked to him about the Department of Justice. And you may not be aware that the Department of Justice actually is within the police department. They have people that are constantly monitoring everything the police department does. And an idea, which is one of the things we want to talk about today, is how we move forward. One of the ideas, and I know that Chief Geyer, I can't speak on his behalf, but I can tell you he has the heart that if he has not heard from black community leaders and individuals in this community about policing, I bet you he's open to hearing about it. I absolutely do. And this show is called ABQ Connect. So I want you to share any and all of those ideas, because what I'm going to do with them is I'm going to contact Chief Geyer. I'm going to tell him about our conversation. I may even send him a recorded piece of this interview. And I can tell you he is the type of man that would sit down and have an open discussion and listen to suggestions. But I will say, I know that he's got, as the institutional prejudices that Bishop Cooper opened up the program talking about, those may be present, and I don't know about that. But if they are, I'd love for him to be able to talk about them. Ron, tell me how you were personally affected by racism growing up in Dallas.
Oh, well, in Dallas, we were in the midst of the integration. That was just the first. When I was in high school, we were just now going through integration of high schools. And going to a all-white high school, they took our community, which was a black community, divided us in half, sent half to one white school and another to another. Every day there was a fight. We learned more about fighting than learning, until I eventually went to Dallas Jesuit was recruiting black athletes to come for athletics. And I was one of the ones they chose. And I don't know what would have happened had I stayed there at Richardson High School because it was a war trying to get to know each other. And one point, and I'm just going to make this point, then you can take it, don't take it elsewhere, Jim, is if it wasn't for athletics, that was the only salvation for most of the young men. And they didn't have very many, young ladies playing sports at the time. But for young men, that was a salvation, was that we did get to change the culture going through football and basketball and running track with white athletes.
Mm-hmm. And that was really an encouragement to you because you developed friends of all different races.
Absolutely. It was a change because otherwise, it would have made my interaction with, other races probably would have been, it would have never have nurtured. I wouldn't have gained the confidence that, hey, I can like this person a lot quicker when you're fighting for a common goal and you have a common enemy and you're both. And that's what we have now. We have a common enemy. We just got to realize that it's going to take us to defeat it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take all of us, and not just the black community or the Asian community. It's going to take all of us, and the white community has to understand that we're not going to change this culture until everybody works together. And if you're a Christian and you don't believe that, you're not a believer in God.
Mm. Amen. I have Bishop David Cooper of New Hope Full Gospel Baptist Church in Albuquerque and Ron Wallace, the publisher of Perspective Magazine. We're going to have both of them back after this 2-minute break. And Bishop Cooper, when we come back, I want to ask you about your painful experiences with racism. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is John MacArthur welcoming you to Portraits of Grace. Praying according to God's will is a key element in a Christian's life, and it demonstrates Christ-likeness. As Jesus faced the horror of the cross, you remember Jesus never wavered in his commitment to do the Father's will. He prayed, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but thine be done." Jesus taught his disciples the same priority when he instructed them to pray, saying, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." When you pray according to God's will, which is the only faithful way to pray, you can be confident that He hears you and that He will grant your requests. What a great promise. This is John MacArthur, hoping you'll join me again for Portraits of Grace.
Want an easy way to maintain good health? Make your health plan Fluid. Hi, Doug Chamberlain with the Samaritan Ministries Family Health Checkup. Water is important to maintain good health. In fact, the human body is composed mostly of water, which performs many essential functions for life. It regulates our body temperature, lubricates joints, and regulates blood pressure. It energizes our muscles and improves our skin and hair. So how do we make sure we're drinking enough water? Well, carry a reusable water bottle with you, refilling it throughout the day. Drink it with your meals and add some flavor with fresh ingredients like strawberries, lemon, cucumber, and mint. And finally, start your day out with water to help boost your metabolism and fuel your brain and also help your body get rid of toxins. Drinking water is a free and easy way to maintain good health. For more, visit us on Facebook or at familyhealthcheckup.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Tragic events of a week or so ago when we had Mr. George Floyd murdered senselessly on the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Police officers involved. And, I understand the police officer that was primarily responsible with his knee on the neck of George Floyd has now been charged. I'm not sure with what. But the event has just stirred all kinds of unrest around the world. We don't just have protests going on in Albuquerque and Minneapolis, but in every state, every large city in this country, we have things going on in other countries, and people really are, at least today, profoundly aware of the racism that exists in the United States and the world. And I want to talk about your own experience, Bishop Cooper. How have you had a painful experience with racism?
Well, Jim, I wanted to tell you that all of my life I've had a painful experience with racism, but in different levels and different ways it's been manifested. Mm-hmm. Of course, when I was a young man living in Chicago, we had an incident where some white kids had actually was in the school that I was in, was right on down the block from White Sox Park, and the street that I lived on was almost like the end of the black neighborhood, and the white neighborhood right behind us where we went into school during that time because of integration was the same neighborhood, Bridgeport, that Mayor Daley, the old Mayor Daley, lived in and his family was from. Mm-hmm. And we had an incident where a white kid fought a black kid, and then some other white kids came and beat up all of the black kids they could at school. I ran home. They actually grabbed my brother and threw him in the trunk, and the police found him, and he was returned back home. That brother lives in Albuquerque today, and he was returned home safely. But those instances is more than one, because it's everywhere. And a lot of it is microaggressions. I think the microaggressions are worse than the major event, because the major event creates a wound, and then the microaggressions that we deal with as African American, especially African American men, where our skin color itself is considered a threat or a deadly weapon. That's why we don't have to have a gun in our hand. We can have Skittles in our hands and a 7-Up or a bottle of water or a cigarette or nothing at all, and still suffer under police brutality. So that's the best way for me to answer that for you. Mm. Because, again, even with my personal experience, every African-American black man who's been living any length of time has had some experience, some more severe than others. Mm-hmm. But I think that all of us deal with this on a continual basis, because it's not the racists themselves as much as it's the institution. And I want to keep saying that, because we got to change the institution. It's almost like crime. You're not going to really get rid of criminals, but if you get rid of the system that is put in place for them to thrive, like the mob, what ends up happening in the cartels, you end up having a safer society. So the thing is that they are thriving in the institutions of our country, whether or not it's our churches, whether it's racist, whether or not it's in our judicial system, our police department, in the corporate structure, in academic circles, wherever they are allowed to hide and to operate, sometimes even in plain sight, and there's nothing done about it. It's a joke, and they feel comfortable. They feel comfortable. And that's the thing I was saying in the first place, that this police officer felt comfortable about operating as he did. And that just says that the other three were complicit. And that's what has happened, especially in the communities that's not of color, is that they have become so complicit by, you know, somebody put up a sign, white silence is violence, that, you know, we hear the joke, somebody dresses in blackface, somebody make fun, call a black person out of their name, call them monkey, call them the N-word, call them something else, and nobody corrects them, nobody says that's not right, they devalue us, they demean us, and ultimately, this whole issue about race was invented by white Europeans because they did not want us to be able, as African Americans and Africans, to be counted as whole persons in the Constitution. Out of the 84 articles in the Constitution, 6 of them are about supporting slavery. And because those states in the South would not sign the Constitution and become a United States unless their ability to maintain free labor through slavery of Africans was somehow protected. And because of that, we were considered 3/5 of a person, unless it was time for representation, then they counted us as whole persons. And when it came to taxes, they did not want us counted at all because they didn't want to have to pay more taxes to the federal government. So this system is entrenched, and you got to understand that same constitution, the fathers of that constitution, many of them were both Christians and slave owners.
Yes.
And so when you think of this whole issue, because I know many of my white colleagues will say, well, you know, that's 400 years past. Well, if you put me anywhere for 400 years, it's going to create some resistance for me, some resentment for me. It may even give me post-traumatic stress syndrome at the same time. And then that's how I parent my children. That affects my community. That affects my self-worth. And so when we think about what happened to George Lloyd and the response of our community, even though I don't believe that all of that is just our community, I believe there's some other agitators in the midst of that, that at the end of the day, racism is affecting our community and the people that got the power to change it, because there's no such thing as racism unless the person who is doing it has the power to oppress the other race.
Mm. Yes.
Because racism is about power, just like sexism is about power. It's about power. So in order for me to mistreat you, I have to have the authority to do so. And many of the people, even the people that put on the badge, who I love, and I love the chief here locally. I know him personally. We have had Bible class together. But the truth of the matter is the institution of racism inside of the police department still exists. There's still certain things. And I'll say this. The police really don't need more training. What they need to do is change their thinking. Because they would not have done that to a white man.
Yes.
And so white, if I would not do it to a white man, that means I don't need to be trained how to subdue somebody. Because otherwise you're telling me there's never a white man who's resisting arrest. There's never a white man who cuts out the police. And we got too much video record of that not being the case. But that white man would have went to jail, got bonded out, went to court, paid his fine, and would still be living with his family. But because he's a black man, simply because he's a black man, and I don't want nobody to get that wrong, because the police have no business being judge, jury, and executioner. And if they don't like that he cussed at them, or they don't like that he did something else that they didn't appreciate, it is not their job to involve themselves as if they're his parents or his master. And so that's what we get as African Americans all the time. And I share this with our Caucasian faith leaders, because my question to them is, what are you preaching on a Sunday? What are you teaching on a Sunday? And it does not share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Do you have that false doctrine that in the Old Testament there was slavery, in the New Testament there was slavery? But Jesus Christ came to set us free. And so if that's the case, and if we believe in our Constitution, which we love to cry, to quote, that all men are created equal, how is it in that same Constitution those of us who are slaves were considered three-fifths of a person? And so that hypocrisy helps to support institutionalized racism. And so when people say, well, white lives matter and blue lives matter, that's not even the discussion. That's not even the concept. That's like a drunk driver after he kills your family, and he said, well, I shouldn't be punished because my life matters. I shouldn't go to jail because my life matters. That doesn't even matter. That doesn't even equate or make sense. You're bringing in a false equivalence because you don't want to deal with the real issue that white folks have not had to march for this, because they haven't experienced it at this level. Otherwise, white folks would be marching when a white person is killed or falsely accused, like we've had black women in New York do and other places across the country. And so I just want you to know that. And one other thing I want to say, because I know you mentioned about us being emotional.
Yes.
We're not really emotional, because if we were emotional, the city really would. Those of us who are mature in our faith We are trying to keep those who are immature in their faith from reacting in a worse manner, because we have a little more patience. But that patience, as I talk to pastors across this country, is wearing thin in the African-American churches. And some of these are mega churches. They are just tired of it. Mm-hmm. It's hard to teach our young people to obey the law, to do what's right, go to school. But because of how they dress, or because of their hairstyle, or because they got a tattoo on, or because they got a hoodie on, they immediately consider not just somebody that may have broke a misdemeanor, but they're considered to be a hardened criminal, and they have to treat the police almost as if he's a master again. Not that they don't respect his authority, but sometimes the abuse of that authority and how they treat us, even when they pull us over, which they would have never done with you, Jeff. Never. You can't even conceive that a policeman would pull you over and say that somebody accused you of something, arrest you, and then throw you out of the car, because he's in the car at one period, pull you out of the car, and then put their knee on your neck for 9 minutes while the other three officers just watch while you cry out, "I can't breathe," and you're a man like we are. And understanding that a man who cries out for his mother, so that means he's been so dehumanized as a grown man in his 40s that he's crying out for his mother. Now, you know, we were kids playing the game. We would actually tease you, you know, Jim calling for his mama, Jim calling for his mama. But this is how desperate this man is. And this man does not remove his knee from his neck, neither the officer. So I want you to understand, it's not just that we are emotional. It is that we're wondering when are our Christian brothers. Now, this is who I'm really talking about, because many of the people who are rioting, they're not believers anyhow. But our Christian brothers who have the ability to cause this to change, because those politicians and lawyers who would put a third-degree murder charge on a man, that if I did it as a citizen, it would be first-degree murder.
Yes.
I mean, and so then you wonder why our community is upset, because he's been charged. Well, again, it's that unfair sentencing. You know, the black kid goes to jail for 10 years for crack, and the white kid that has more cocaine in quality and cost goes and gets probation because it's his first offense. And we're tired as a community concerning that. And it's hard for me to preach to millennials about Christ when they see white Christians who don't preach against racism.
Well, this is Bishop, this is obviously a challenge to all the leadership in our Christian community, and I welcome that challenge, and I welcome you being bold to state that. We've got to take another break to say thank you to some sponsors. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. I'm going to talk to Ron about the peaceful protesters versus some of these riotous people that seem to be coming out after dark. And Bishop, you just mentioned that a lot of those people are probably not Christians. We'll be right back to talk more about this topic. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Life can take an unexpected turn in your home or business by fire or flood. As a result, you may have mold problems. Let the experts put your mind at ease with a quick response from locally owned water extraction experts. They'll provide service within the hour, are available 24/7 for emergencies, and work with all insurance companies. Professional, certified, and friendly technicians are here to do the job right the first time. Call the experts now at 505-250-6500 or visit them online at waterextraction.com.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. With the events surrounding COVID-19, I'm reminded of the power of commitment made by our first responders. The sacrifice they make is both humbling and inspiring. And to say thank you, Power Ford is offering a $1,000 discount to first responders and medical professionals. Plus, every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty, complimentary maintenance, and roadside assistance. Find your ride at MyPowerFord.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Calvary College is now open for registration. Calvary College is offering select online classes as an opportunity for individuals to take their life's calling to a whole new level with an educational emphasis in biblical studies. With our unique partnerships with Veritas International University and Calvary Chapel University, you will have the opportunity to obtain your bachelor's or master's degree with complete online programs.
Whether you're looking to obtain an accredited online degree or take individual courses to become better equipped in your knowledge of God's unchangeable truth, Calvary College has you covered with a range of opportunities. On-site classes are scheduled to begin in 2021. For updates on classes and registration information for Calvary College, please visit calvaryabq.college. That's calvaryabq.college. For Calvary College, calvaryabq.college. You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Bishop David Cooper of New Hope Full Gospel Baptist Church in Albuquerque on the phone with us, along with Ron Wallace, the publisher of Perspective Magazine in Albuquerque. Gentlemen, you answered the call this morning from me, and again, I want to thank you, and I know our listeners are blessed hearing from you today about this heartbreaking death of George Floyd and how that all happened. Of course, I don't want to forget Ahmaud Arbery. He was also killed by really in a senseless way, and it appears to be totally racially motivated. I want to go to Ron now and ask you, Ron, that there seems to be some peaceful protesters of all different ethnicities, and they seem to be on the street on Central. I know yesterday they were downtown, and that happens kind of before dark. But after dark, there's a whole bunch of people that call themselves protesters, but all they're really doing is breaking windows and vandalizing things, and they're not really doing anything that, in my opinion, are reflective of the heart of George Floyd. Would you agree?
Definitely, Jim. Those are, they're actually criminals, and we should see them for what they are. They are criminals, and the other groups are actually implants in there to make sure that the voice of what you're trying to project is intercepted. And with the violence and with all that, then comes the confusion. The news media, everybody start talking about the violence. They forget the purpose. The purpose is police reform on the tails of the death of a young man. and that has got to be what goes forward, or unless everything is a waste of time. Because you have to push now. Now, you know, the violence actually helped to get the attention. But you have to have people who are pushing this forward. See, the violence never should have happened, but it did happen. So make it work then, because you can't control what has already happened, but we cannot go back. Mm-hmm. And with what has happened with the situation around the country, I mean, how can you have all of this stuff going on around the country and your most powerful people, Congress, the Senate, and the President, are sitting back watching? Mm-hmm. All of them need to be right now in a huddle talking about, okay, this is serious. We got to do something, or it's going to be like, just like COVID-19. It's going to come back to get you. All of the viruses come back. This is just one of the viruses coming back, to roost. And the deal is that you don't do nothing about it, it's going to, you're bound to make the same change, problems. This has been something that's already been brought to their attention, and they continue to think they can just, ignore it. It'll go away. And this is Democrats, Republicans, and the President of the United States are all guilty all the time of this, of looking at it like they don't have to adjust it. It is something that if they looked at it, they could fix it.
We're losing you a little bit, Ron.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Jim?
Yeah, we can hear you a little bit better now.
Okay, that's right. But if they looked at what was going on and wanted to adjust it, they could address it, and they could adjust what is going with our law, legal system, not just the police, though.
Ron, we are completely losing what you, I know you've got some great thoughts. What we might need to do is have you call back to the station, because I think we've lost signal with you and we can't hear anything that you're saying. While you do that, Ron, if you could call us back at 338-5790, we want to make sure we get all your comments in. I'm going to switch over to Bishop Cooper. Bishop Cooper, talk to us about something positive that you've seen. Have you seen God change the hearts of racist people?
Not necessarily so. So let me say this, Jim. I think that that people who are racist, hearts can change. So have I ever seen it? Yes. Have I seen it in this instance? It's too early to know. But what I have seen, which is probably even more important, is that those of us who are commissioned to change the heart of racist people are finally taking another look at what has been obvious to many of us who have been experiencing this for years. I shared a message on Wednesday night, and since we're on the Christian radio station, I know you don't mind me throwing a scripture in.
Please do.
And I talked about responsible biblical leadership for our Wednesday night Bible class, and you can easily go see it from Proverbs 31, which usually we use to talk about the proverbial woman as the mother gives advice to her son about what type of woman that he should marry. But prior to verse 10, when she starts that dialogue with her son, she says this: open thy mouth to the dumb and the cause of all, such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Now, I want to read that to you from the Message brought up, the King James Version.
Please.
Here's what she says. She says, speak up for the people who have no voice, for the rights of all the down and outers. Speak out for justice. Stand up for the poor and destitute. There is a need, and what I have seen that is more positive is that many of my peers who have never spoken about changing even their focus in the midst of this, and that's why the rioters are so dangerous to the process, not because they are destroying property in their frustration, but because they distract, as Ron says, from the real discussion and the real changes that has to occur. And that is a reversal of the devaluing of people of color in our country, especially when it comes to human rights and civil rights, that we must just be honest with ourselves as a country. And I see more leaders. I'm getting calls from people who are pastors in Southern Baptist churches. And, you know, Southern Baptists, you know, was organized around the central idea that they could not support the Northern Baptist Church's idea of abolishing slavery. It's actually in their record. And so I love my Southern Baptist brothers. New Hope Church was actually a Southern Baptist mission. But many times the reason that our churches became missions of Southern Baptist churches was 66 years ago. People were not comfortable worshiping together. And much of that was because, again, microaggressions. So things that are so small that unless you are the person actually being affected by it, you don't see it as an issue. Let me say two things. I don't know if Ron is back yet, so I'll say this. So we use this stuff about identity politics. You know, I don't believe in identity politics, which is amazing to me. Because the construct of identity politics really is a construct around groups galvanizing together to make sure that their rights are taken care of. This comes back all the way back to 1983. And it wasn't even the black group that first started dealing with identity politics. It wasn't even lesbian or gay community. It was a whole different community that recognized that they were not being treated. It was actually our Native brothers and sisters in the same way simply because of their color. And this other issue about I don't see race, and I hear a lot of my white brothers say, I don't see race. Well, you made us see race for 400 years in slavery, another couple hundred years from Jim Crow law to fighting through civil rights to be dealing. Do you know that we are 6 years from Ferguson and nothing has changed? We are 6 years from Ferguson. We had a woman get killed in our own home in Kentucky, and the person they were going to arrest, they had the wrong address. They shoot her 8 or 9 times. They shoot her boyfriend who doesn't know what's going on, so he brings his gun out. He has a license to carry to protect himself because they undercover. They do not announce that they police. And now he's up for charges for shooting that back at the police. And so, and she worked for the state. She worked with an EMT. She was an employee of the city. And the person that they were going to arrest had already been arrested at the right address. And so it are these little things that we would be more careful of if we knew we were in a white community going after a white suspect. Those little microaggressions. And what I say to everybody on the phone is that this is not the sum total. This is the sum total of all these things that you never see, that we deal with on a weekly and a daily basis. And I'm a community leader. And if one of my vehicles is registered under New Hope as well as my name, and because of that, a lot of times officers pull behind me, and I know they run the plates, and then they pull around from me and keep going. But in my other vehicle, I've probably been stopped probably 6 times in the last 2 years, not for speeding, not gotten a ticket, and not all of them have been. Now, I got some tickets for speeding. Don't get me wrong. But in many cases, they're just looking for people who look suspicious. And the only thing I need to do to look suspicious is be black.
That's
Gary Smalley says we got to change our thinking so we can change our feelings, so we can change our behavior, which is our words and action. And the only way you change thinking is through examples, exhortation, teaching, and conversion.
Ron Wallace, you back on the phone with us?
We only got a few minutes left. Bishop Cooper's long-winded. I'll tell you, I love Bishop Cooper.
I'll be quiet.
But he speaks so much truth to everything. Is my phone working okay better this time?
It sounds great, Ron. Ron, let me ask you this. I know that you're doing some great work with young leaders in the International District. Tell us the type of work you're doing right now.
Oh, and it's so interesting. We just started a project before all of this happened. And it was amazing what the young people had to say about living and growing up in that district and how they embraced the multiculturalism. And a lot of stuff I was not aware of, but, we were talking about the area and the police department and how the police department sees the area. And it's amazing because they have the highest crime and they have the highest, if everything makes it seem to be higher in the International District. But when I worked with Mayor Chavez and we were looking into all of that, we got to realize a lot of crime is allowed to be channeled into those areas. And those young people are affected by that. They see homelessness. They see all of the evils of but they don't get the resources that they see. We allow homelessness to be advanced, but we don't allow it in the crisis community. We don't allow it in the civil community. So they're taking the burden of the homelessness and all of the things that are being allowed to be coming in there.
Ron, I apologize again. We're just getting very every bit and piece of your statement, so we're not able to hear you well. I know we almost live in a third world country when it comes to cell phone reception in New Mexico. I don't know why, but I don't know if we can correct it at all. Are you in a position where you might be able to go outside or elevate yourself? Because we can't hear all the great points that you're making.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm asking for the outside.
Okay.
So we're just not going to tell each other better reception. But it is interesting what our young people have to say. And that is some of the things I'd like to see if I were to say something profound before we finish,
is that we have got to both Democratic and Republican parties, we got to start looking at getting our young people involved so we're not tied up with the party. I don't see any party to just go the same way in everything.
Yeah, we're having trouble hearing him.
Yeah, Ron, I apologize. We just absolutely can't hear you, but I need you to tell me one thing before I let you go, and that is, can I get you in the studio here to make some of these comments? Because I know what you have to say is very valuable, but for some reason we've not been able to get you hooked up on the cell phone, Ron. I appreciate you visiting with us today. You're welcome to try to call back again. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show. Bishop Cooper, I need to go to you now and ask you a question that I hope you don't have the impression is trivializing any of these issues. But many Americans, including me, are inspired by movies that we see. And a movie that most of us will remember is Remember the Titans. And in that movie, Denzel Washington takes a number of kids, black, white, and some other ethnicities, and he takes them up to a camp. And the whites don't like the blacks, and the blacks don't like the whites, and he puts them together in drills, and they're fighting. But all of a sudden, because they're in a war together, I remember a scene where he takes them to the battlefield of Gettysburg, and he talks about blacks and whites being fighting in that battle and trying to fight for freedom for all races, and how many people died, and it's a very touching moment. And then somehow through that camp, they come out of it, and they're one unit, and they understand each other, and you know, maybe it's not... I guess the rest of the movie, there's still some people that didn't get it. But I guess I'm wondering, where do we go from here? How do we get blacks and whites particularly to start understanding one another and not being terrified of one another?
So that's a good question. And I don't think the movie example of Denzel coaching the football team is a bad example. I just think we need to look at it completely and totally as it relates to how we go from here. That there were other coaches and other boosters of those high schools that did not want the black and white students to work together. Mm. And even one of the other coaches actually tried to undermine Denzel's leadership. I think that's probably really the real issue, is that the rules are different. And if we make the rules the same and apply those rules fairly and equitably, I think even in how things are described in our community and how people see people in the African-American community, many times we have conclusions. We've drawn conclusions based on our rhetoric concerning each other. But in order for it to really change, it has to go at the institutional level. I keep using that word because it is in the institutions that these issues are never dealt with in a serious way, and so that those of us who are men and women of God must take a moment to really address these issues, not with one sermon, but real conversation. And as Denzel was allowed on the campus of a school that was used to a white coach, I can count how many times in 28 years I've spoken for one of our white pastors or preachers, and I can count, and I can almost not count how many white preachers has preached for me, because I always try to introduce them to the African-American church experience, because the only reason there is such thing as an African-American church experience is because, again, the white Christians for years would not welcome the black Christian. And because of that, so if we're going to change that, and I think we are beginning to change it, but it cannot be as long, you know, Habakkuk asked the Lord, how long? It cannot be as long as it took the children of Israel to get up from under the hand of the Babylonians and the Chaldeans. We can't be 70 years longer in this. because the young people and even the older people who thought this would be over by now, that we wouldn't have this discussion. We don't have the power as African Americans to stop it. So what you see on the streets many times is frustration by the lack of the power to stop it. And the people that do have the power to stop it, like many times my friend Dr. E. Dewey Smith, who pastors in Atlanta, says that we have placed economy over humanity. That's the only way you can have slavery for 400 years. But we as believers are to place humanity over economy. Jesus came to preach to the poor, and then the Bible says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? So institutional racism exists in the first place around the dollar. It's really about the dollar. The racism became currency for those who wanted to exploit other people so that they themselves could be rich. And now that system is so entrenched that it is carried forth in many of our systems. And until we change it, Dr. King says the most segregated hour in America is Sunday morning. And even though there are many white pastors who have the luxury of pastoring quite a few African Americans, there are very few African American pastors who have the luxury of pastoring a lot of Caucasians because of the mindset of many white parishioners and Christians as to the devaluation of the theology and the insight and the teaching that they might receive from the African American church. And then some of them are afraid. And what I tell people all the time, if you're afraid to be around black people, why are you afraid? Are you afraid because somebody has taught you to be afraid? And so when we get rid of that fear and replace it with faith and do some real concrete things that I see people doing like you, Jim, because, you know, some people think I'm angry. I'm not angry. I'm passionate. Mm-hmm. I love everybody. You know, we include in our church Hispanics, whites. We got Italian. We got Filipino. We got Native. But we are predominantly an African-American colored church. But we embrace everyone. Nobody here is treated any differently. And it starts at the top. So in order for that to happen, so that don't mean I don't have one person inside of my church who's biased against white folks. I very seldom say black folks are racist against white folks because you have to have power to be a racist. And so in some contexts, black people do have, I guess at the church would be one of the places that they might have power. But I don't allow that. I set the tone for otherwise. I put people who are not look like me, not only in leadership, but I speak to their issues and their concerns whenever there's injustice. So are we getting better? The good news, yes. Is this about to end soon? I think the black community and even the faith community is saying, at 6 years after Ferguson, are we still dealing with this, really? So it means that we can't change it. And the people that should change it are the ones who believe in the name of Jesus.
Yes.
Amen.
And those are the people that we want to connect everyone listening to. This is ABQ Connect, Bishop David Cooper. He is with New Hope Full Gospel Baptist Church in Albuquerque. You can find out more information from their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ The New Hope Experience ABQ. We also want to say thank you to Ron Wallace. He is the publisher of Perspective Magazine. Ron, thanks for joining us. Sorry that we got cut off. You can go to facebook.com/ The Perspective New Mexico, Perspective NM. David Cooper, thank you for joining us. Ron Wallace, we appreciate you. Hope to get you on the show again very soon and want to really make a difference when it comes down to all this. Thank you, Bishop Cooper.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.